Annoy people on the quiet car and call the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Okay, and we're back here. KM to AM, 2 hours down, 3 hours to go. Hopefully you're enjoying the show. We've talked about the Yankees, we've talked about the Mets, a little bit about the Giants, and more of that to come in about 10 minutes when Dan Duggan from The Athletic, covering the G-Men, joins us. But let's see if I can sneak in a couple calls real quick. John is in Oxford, Connecticut. Hello, John.
Oh, thanks, Keith, for taking the call. You know, we spoke a couple of weeks ago. We're Cowboys fans. You're younger than I am, and you know, I called you out on being sounding like a Jets fan. Dude, you know, you got off the line with me, and you said the Cowboys would never win a Super Bowl with Jerry Jones as owner. Will you own that statement?
Moving forward, as long as Jerry Jones is alive and is the front man and the face of the Dallas Cowboys, the Big D will stand for big disappointment. They will not win another Super Bowl with Jerry Jones having his hands in everything.
Okay. Now, okay, I hear you saying that as a Cowboy fan, which honestly disgusts me. Okay, so you called me.
You should be disgusted. The Big D stands for big disgusted.
Okay, so you're a fan of the big disgusted.
I'm disgusted watching them getting bounced by the Green Bay Packers last year, the Niners before that.
You called me delusional.
Big delusional fan base.
No, I'm just wondering why you're a fan if you don't think they're going to win. I'm just asking you that.
I'll tell you. So I heard Evan and Tiki earlier. I think Loogie was using me as an example, or somehow my name came up and they used the KM to AM drop talking about, you know, there's Cowboys fans. And then Loogie did his Chris Russo mad dog. There's Cowboys fans everywhere. Like, you know, yelled about it. And I'm just like, listen, don't lump me in with the group. I guess you could lump me in with what they talked about further. You know, Tiki Barber talking about how the Dallas Cowboys were on television so much and how, you know, back then, the Giants and the Jets weren't very good, and so many people in the tri-state area chose the Dallas Cowboys, and all of these different eras. And I was in that era of 90s Dallas Cowboys fans, as well as 90s Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls fans, as Tiki talked about being a Bulls fan because of that. I also had the great fortune of not choosing the Mets, but choosing the Yankees in the 90s because they were winning. I was just a little boy looking at the TV, and the TV told me who to root for. Cable television. I didn't even have internet access. I didn't have a cell phone yet. I was a little boy without a dad to tell me, you're going to wear this hat, you're going to wear this jersey, we're going to the game. I was a little boy who was athletic, who could play a little bit of football, basketball, baseball, and looked up to these grown men, and I wanted to be a winner, a champion. So that's how I fell into the trap of rooting for we them boys. How about them Cowboys? It's not as fun as it looks. It's not as fun as it looks. You're going to win regular season games, and then you're going to be crushed and disappointed when it matters the most. That feeling of playoffs. Yes, we're in the playoffs, and my team plays tonight. It quickly turns into same old thing. So some of you older Cowboys fans who have seen multiple Super Bowls and still believe that this Dallas Cowboys organization and team can get there, I don't believe that. I don't feel that way. I'm not even repping them. I actually got to place my order soon for all NFL merch. You're literally going to see me in videos that come from WFAN, and I'm just going to be wearing the shield, NFL. You're literally going to see me not rep a team. One, honestly, in this market, on WFAN, being a Dallas Cowboys fan doesn't really help my cause much. And two, I am tired of it. I'm sick of it. Can they sign CeeDee Lamb? Are they going to actually let Dak Prescott walk out of the door? I mean, Mike McCarthy's good as done no matter what they do this year. Micah Parsons wants to be the highest paid defensive player. I just don't see this team winning this year or anytime soon. And that's okay, right? I think that's perfectly fine for me to say.
You got to get that Bishop Sycamore t-shirt.
Yeah, that Bishop. Yeah, I got to get like a Varsity Blues shirt. I got to get like the football movies. I'll just wear all football movies shirts and, you know, just be like a blanketed football fan. I got to, you know, draft my fantasy teams and I'll root for my fantasy teams instead. All right, before we go to break, Brian is in Connecticut. Brian, you're on the Fan.
Hey, Keith. I appreciate the call. Huge fan and listener. Just wanted to clarify what everyone's been saying about, you know, when the Cowboys fans really started emerging over here noticeably, like more so than Jets and Giants fans. I believe it was in the 70s when those years were just dead for New York football. And that grew into the 80s and into the Johnson era. And I think the Cowboys were always hot in those years and, and you know, America's team and all that. But it was definitely the 1970s New York football decline, horrendous football both ways.
Yeah, there's errors. There's the era of Cowboys fans that are Roger Staubach fans and Tony Dorsett and Drew Pearson. And then there's also the, you know, like me, the triplets of Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin. And then they had Deion Sanders and guys like Moose and Jay Novacek and Charles Haley, who went to James Madison University, where I went to school. But then they also had Tony Romo, DeMarcus Ware, Jason Witten, Dez Bryant. And that made a lot of fans that are now still rooting for Dak Prescott. Ezekiel Elliott's back. Boo. CeeDee Lamb, yeah. Micah Parsons in this group.
I just don't see them as a full unit, man. I think there's too many uh-ohs with Dak. And those teams that you talked about with, you know, even Romo, but Aikman and Emmitt Smith, those were some legit teams. You knew what they were going to do, run it down your throat, and then their defense was it. So, I don't know. It's interesting.
It is very interesting. Thanks for the call. We're going to talk football because now we have to break. Dan Duggan is coming up for the G-Men, the Giants fans. We're going to talk about everything that went on at practice with the Lions. And again, we got to chill. My whole message is like, we don't know what the Giants are going to be, but a couple practices here, Malik Nabers is the greatest wide receiver we've ever seen. Brian Burns is the next coming of Michael Strahan. Everybody relax. We're going to talk about it. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Here's Aaron Boone to lead off. His first at-bat of the game. There's a fly ball deep to left. It's on its way. There it goes. And the Yankees are going to the World Series.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Hello. Right back at it on The Fan with my man Dan Duggan, joining us right now covering the G-Men, the New York Giants for The Athletic. And everybody's talking about those Giants after the joint practice they had with the Lions. What's up, Dan?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm great. So let's talk about it. I'm getting right to it. I feel like time is burning on me tonight. I grew up watching the Florida State Seminoles, right? I was a big fan of, like, Chris Winkie, even, like, you know, Peter Warwick, Warwick Dunn, if you go further back. So I just, you know, always liked the culture that the Noles had. And they used to have this guy, number 99, who as a freshman was a monster, who was all ACC. He was just bigger, faster, stronger than anybody that tried to stop him. And he's still bigger, faster, stronger than most of the guys that try and stop him. I'm talking about Brian Burns. He's a problem. And I don't think that many Giants fans realize the whole Spider-Man theme, him coming back to New York, the red and the blue. You will have red jerseys this year. Like, people will be showing up in Spider-Man costumes. That number zero jersey is tough. You might as well go buy that to replace number 26. Please talk to everyone that can hear you about what you have seen out of Brian Burns so far in Giants camp.
Yeah, I mean, he's come as advertised. I mean, you give up a couple draft picks, $141 million contract, you better look good in training camp. And no, I mean, he has. I mean, there's been some good pass rushes obviously to come through the Giants, but it's been a little bit of a dry spell here since, like, maybe Jason Pierre-Paul moved on. And you hope, obviously, Kayvon Thibodeau is taking the step to be that guy. But even seeing Thibodeau in practice and seeing Burns in practice, you do see a different level. Like, whereas, you know, I think Kayvon this is a big year for him. Maybe he does really break through. I know he had 11.5 sacks last season, but really takes a step to be more consistent. Whereas, yeah, Burns, you know, the kind of way you described, he just kind of moves different for an edge rusher. You know, he's really quick. He almost looks like a basketball player in some of his pass rush moves. Like, he does, like, crossovers. Like, he's definitely a very explosive, like, twitchy athlete, which, you know, I think some, like, Kayvon's a little more of, like, a power guy. But, no, he's definitely been impressive. And, again, like I said, they're really counting on him. You know, that was kind of the big offseason acquisition. Push a lot of chips in there to get a guy like him because, you know, as everyone saw, Hard Knocks, you know, assistant GM Brandon Brown described, you know, guys like this don't become available very often. So they went out, got him, and they really need him to be even better than he's been to this point in his career. He's been a really good player. They need him to be a great player. They need him to be like a first team all pro type player because, you know, that's what they're paying him to be.
Man, shout out to Joe Shane and his prior work with the Carolina Panthers and the existing relationships he had there. When I saw that conversation in Hard Knocks they were having at the Senior Bowl and how that all came together, I was like, oh, light bulb went off. I'm like, oh, that's how they made that work. So, yeah, Brian Burns, I have my eye on him. If he's healthy, he's the type of guy that Giants fans are going to start to love right away. And you need a guy like that. You know, I don't use this term because I just don't use it. But they call guys like that war daddies. And right next to him is Sexy Dexy, Dexter Lawrence, who was already talked about, I don't want to be at the Pro Bowl by myself. He could be there very well with Brian Burns. You put out a tweet 2 hours ago, and it made me laugh. You said, went to a fight and a Giants-Lions practice broke out. How about Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns? Tell us more about what was going on in the trenches. Nobody wants smoke with those guys, but it seemed like the Lions came in with their grit and their attitude trying to make their presence felt against the Giants' offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, I was watching the Giants offense versus the Lions defense, kind of had to pick a field as the two fields going at the same time, and my colleague Charlotte Carroll was watching the Giants defense against the Lions offense. So I kind of was jealous, but she got a little more action in terms of the fights on her field. But obviously I've seen all the videos and stuff, and it's funny, it really wasn't the guys in the trenches, which typically is where these fights kind of start. The biggest melee really was wide receivers and DBs, where Amon-Ra St. Brown, obviously the star receiver for the Lions, was mixing up with rookie corner Drew Phillips. And it's funny, I refer back to Hard Knocks again. When Drew Phillips came and visited the Giants, Dable asked him, like, what's your number one trait that separates you on the field? And without hesitation, he said, my toughness. I'm not afraid of anyone on the field. And, you know, this is his first taste of NFL competition, you know, against an opposing team. And he certainly backed up that pre-draft claim because Drew Phillips was in the middle of everything today. Like, to a point where it went a little over the edge, even after practice, you could tell he probably got chastised, and he kind of said, hey, I need to tone it down a little bit. But I still think, even if Dable wasn't totally happy with, you know, crossing the line at times, you'd rather rein that in than have a guy who you have to light that fire. So I think to live with that for a rookie third-round pick going against, you know, one of the best receivers in the league and not giving an inch, and again, at times it got a little excessive when you're throwing punches and stuff like that. But I do think, to use your word, the grit that he showed and that the Giants showed overall was encouraging because they went to Detroit last year, the same exact time before the first preseason game, and they got punched in the mouth in the first joint practice, and it was like it stunned them. They were totally caught off guard by how intense and loud and aggressive the Lions were. So clearly they weren't going to let that happen again, and they came out and kind of brought the fight to the Lions. And then it was just kind of like a powder keg at that point. Both teams, every play toward the end of practice was, you know, those extracurriculars, again, I think maybe they'll try and rein that in for tomorrow. But as far as setting the tone, both teams are kind of up to the task in the morning.
Again, on the phone is Dan Duggan from The Athletic at D Duggan on Twitter at D Duggan 21. Is the 21 for Tiki Barber?
No, I'm from Massachusetts. So I'll go where that's Marcus Camby's UMass number. That's really.
Yeah,
really
I love up. That.
21 has been my number since like I was 10 watching UMass, you know, go to the Final Four with Coach Calipari. So, yeah, no, that's a way back. No, it's not New York related, unfortunately.
It works here with the All Knicks right. and the Knicks fans.
There you go.
All right, let's bring it back. So, listen, it's 90-plus degrees out. It's football. These guys see some guys that they can lay a hit on, and they don't have to sit with them in a film room or break bread with them, you know, eating dinner or be on the same bus with them. It's just part of it. I didn't make it to the NFL. I didn't try. But I definitely was in a lot of situations where you scrimmage against other teams or when you do these type of things, you can't wait to have full pads on and go against a guy that you don't know, you don't care about. And so tempers flare. But, you know, I played quarterback, and I remember my freshman year earning my red jersey. It was sacred because that red jersey was protection. They can't hit me anymore. And you know what I was told? Hey, red jersey, you stay out of the big boy stuff. You don't get involved in any fight. So today, when I see Daniel Jones, who's coming back from an ACL, defend his guy, Greg Van Roten, so much I see him come in and full-arm bench press a guy off him, I'm like, what the hell got into Daniel Jones? And everybody's talking about Daniel Jones and his quotes. I mean, he's got the beard. He's looking a little bit older. I mean, obviously, he went through the rehab. I'm proud of that guy. I was saying there's no way this guy's going to be cleared for training camp, but he hit the gym and building muscle and really locking in, having your body under control. That all helped him. Man, what are you seeing out of Daniel Jones so far? He looks like a different guy, and I'll read his quote. He says, I'm very confident, and I know I can play at a high level here. I understand I need to do that consistently. I'm confident in myself. I'm rooting for Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I mean, listen, someone who can't grow a beard, he's got to keep it. It's a good look for him.
I can't grow one either.
Yeah, it's a struggle. So if I see a good one like that, it's a shame that he shaved it off. So he can keep that, give him a little different look, different image here in a kind of a make or break year for sure. I think he's been a little more edgy this offseason. And listen, I know a lot of Giants fans are tired of Daniel Jones. They're hoping they moved on. But listen, this is your quarterback for this season. And I think, you know, again, Giants fans, I don't care what Daniel Jones' feelings, but you can understand why his feelings would be hurt to some extent. You know, not only knowing what happened.
J.J. McCarthy, Dan? J.J. McCarthy talk?
Well, so it's not only knowing that all happened, and then, all right, you got to move on, and then you got to relive it again once a week for 5 weeks in the offseason with Hard Knocks. So, and again, he hasn't shied away from the fact that, yeah, he didn't love all the quarterback pursuit leading into the draft, and then again, having to relive it. So, I think him having a chip on his shoulder is not a bad thing for anybody. And I do think he's always kind of had that. So I think, you know, he's been a quiet, reserved guy with the media, but he's always been competitive and tough. Like, he's always been, you know, Mr. Intangibles. No one can ever take that away from him, even his biggest detractors. He's always been those things. It's funny. Everyone's making such a big deal about what he did today, which definitely was eyebrow raising, and there was video of it. But I remember in camp, I want to say it was 2 years ago, almost the same circumstance, but it was an internal practice and there was no video allowed, I think. It was a huge brawl, and he was in the middle of that, and it was kind of the same reaction. Like, hey, Daniel, we love that you're, like, getting your teammates back, but also, like, to your point, like, stay in the back. Let Greg Van Roten fight his own battle, and then let John Runyon and Jermaine Illuminor come clean it up. It's not really your job, but again, it's endearing to an extent for your teammates because you know he's got your back. He doesn't look at it like, oh, I'm in the red jersey. I can just go chill over here, but at the same time, he is with the $40 million quarterback. You don't need, a broken thumb or hitting on a helmet while he's, you know, in the middle of some scrum. So I think a little more conscious going forward. But, hey, it's good. And I guess it's a good sign that his instinct in that moment was to go get his teammates back.
Yeah, and he spoke on it. He said, situations happen like that. I try to stand up for my guys. He's my teammate. He would stick up for me. I'm going to stick up for him. Like, that's a foxhole guy. That's the type of guy you want to go to battle with, and I think he's doing a lot to show, you know, it doesn't matter what we say on WFAN, it doesn't matter what people say on Twitter, but he's showing those guys that work out with him, watch film with him, and sweat and practice every day with him that he's the leader of the team, he's got their backs, and that's what you want. Let's talk about this offensive line next, right? You know, having a quarterback that pushes a guy off you, you're willing to go out there and die for that guy. And what I feel like is this offensive line can be improved. But right now, the center, John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, is out. Evan Neal is in street clothes. And obviously, you bring in Van Roten and you bring in Illuminor. Before that, you know, can't leave out Runyon. And we obviously know Andrew Thomas is one of the best out there when he's healthy. I feel like it's so important for these guys to be a cohesive unit that you can count on, because we have a bunch of weapons now, right? It's like when you look at the wide receivers, and we'll talk about them in a minute, it's all right there. So what do you think about this offensive line? Guys not participating right now, like specifically Evan Neal. Let's talk about him, what this means for him. John Michael Schmidt's coming back, and how this line is improved with the additions of John Runyon and Illuminor.
Yeah, so I'll put Neil and Schmitz in two different buckets. So with Neil, I mean, obviously, you know, the performance has not been what you wanted from the number seven pick, but also the injuries have been, you know, become the story now. And he's not even doing really much on the side. There's nothing that tells me, oh, he's going to be back in a week. He's going to be back in 5 days. Like, I don't know what the timeline is there. And it's pretty obvious that they've moved on because Illuminor was brought in here. Obviously, he knew he could play right tackle, but they put him at left guard to start the OTAs. He spent all spring there. He's been all summer on his own training to be left guard. Day one of camp, he shows up. All right, Neil's not ready to go. You're switching back to right tackle, which, listen, that's what he's played the last 2 years. I think this is, at the end of the day, a beneficial thing for the Giants, as unfortunate to say, you know, predicated on Neil's injury. But I think Illuminor is a better right tackle than Evan Neal, so I think you want Illuminor right tackle. And then you go out and sign Van Roten, so it's like, well, now you got another veteran guard in here, so you're not even planning to move Illuminor back. He's going to stay right tackle, so whenever Evan Neal gets back, I mean, I think at best you're talking like a swing tackle type role this season. And then, you know, it probably addresses future after the year. I mean, obviously injuries could change things, get him back in the mix, but it's just really hard to see him being kind of part of the puzzle right now. Schmitz is in an interesting spot where he didn't have a great rookie year for a guy who was viewed as like the second round pick, 6 years playing in the Big Ten. You thought he'd be plug and play. It wasn't the greatest performance at all last year. These invaluable reps he's missing now. He's missed like seven straight practices with the shoulder injury. The Dable initially said was minor. I mean, seven practices, only a week, so it's not like it's some season ender. But every day that passes, you know, it's more and more time he's missing, talking about, you know, getting the continuity with those new guys on the line. He needs these practices right now to be very beneficial for a young player. So that's a little disconcerting that he's obviously not going to practice tomorrow. He won't play on Thursday. So now you're talking about next week. And, you know, the clock's kind of ticking. The season's, you know, not too far around the corner. So definitely some unsettled pieces. I think you just have to feel better, first and foremost. Just keep Andrew Thomas healthy and the line, you know, improves immeasurably. And then with Runyon and Illuminor and even Van Roten to an extent, you have three veterans. So I think there's a baseline level of competency. And that's a big jump from where they were last year because they did not have that baseline level of competency at a number of spots. And when Thomas is out, you could say basically across the line they didn't have that. So if you have three vets that at least can be serviceable NFL players, and, you know, you're hoping probably a little bit more than that, and Thomas, then they're in decent shape. But, yeah, I think it would be nice to get Schmitz back so you can maybe get Van Roten at right guard and really settle on that five and let them spend the last 3 weeks of camp, you know, practicing day in and day out together.
It's so important to go to battle with the guy to your right, left, whatever, and just know where they're going to be, what they're going to do, and be on the same page. If you don't have that up front, you don't have anything. And you hear John Mara talk about, everybody knows we weren't blocking anybody for Daniel Jones. Well, this is it. These guys better be the guys that can block for Daniel Jones. And what I hope is for Daniel Jones to have some time to read the defense and distribute the pill. I always talk about distributing the pill. As a quarterback, I had a coach. He's like, your job is to just give these guys their medicine. They need the ball. They need the ball to live. And now you have a bunch of wide receivers that they're going to want the ball, starting with Malik Nabers. And in Hard Knocks, we see Dable ask him, like, you know, how do you respond if you're not getting the ball early in the game? Well, if you draft a guy six overall, like, he's getting the ball. So we know Nabers is getting his targets. Jalin Hyatt, I think that's going to open up some lanes for him down the field. Darius Slayton is all reliable. And Wandale Robinson is the guy you're going to be sending in motion, maybe have some pitches, reverses, some gadgets for. But here's a question about a guy that I just completely forgot they even had. The Bills connection still holding. Isaiah McKenzie out of Georgia. This is an all-SEC team at wide receiver. What have you seen out of him in camp? And do you think he has a good chance to be involved in the offense as wide receiver five?
Yeah, well, so like you said, the four names you started off there are clearly the top four guys. You know, Nabers, he's not going to worry about not getting the ball, I don't think, because they're going to force feed him the ball. Wandale Robinson, same thing. Like, he's going to be like what you described, kind of that gadget guy or a lot of short passes. He's going to get the ball a ton. And then Hyatt and Slayton are kind of, I could see them being sort of a timeshare probably for that wide receiver three spot. And, you know, I think right now they're trying to give Hyatt as many opportunities as he can because, you know, he's the young player at the upside. You hope he takes and runs with it. But like you said, they also know they have old reliable Slayton that I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up, you know, kind of overtaking Hyatt getting that role back. But so those are the four guys that run with the first team pretty much exclusively. Like, very rarely we see maybe Isaiah Hodgins get a snap here or there. Allen Robinson got a snap here or there. McKenzie has gotten a few lately. I would say McKenzie has kind of come on the last couple of practices where he has gotten a few reps with the ones. making more plays with the twos. I mean, I think really with him, it's going to come down to is the return game. Because you basically have, like I said, you have those four wide receivers. You're going to keep one of the receivers as a returner. So whether that's McKenzie or Gunnar Olszewski, who had a great, you know, second half of the season once the Giants picked him up last year as a punt returner, not as accomplished as a receiver, doesn't have the same background with Dable that McKenzie has, but if they just feel Olszewski's a better punt returner, I don't know how many touches are going to be there in the offense for that number five wide receiver. So I think those two guys are basically battling for one spot, and you know, I think it'll probably almost be more of a returner decision, but McKenzie probably gives you a little more if you're worried about depth behind Wanda Robinson. I think he could step in and contribute, whereas Olszewski really hasn't done much of that in his career to this point.
We know that they need guys that can catch punts, catch kickoffs, return them without that being an issue on special teams. Made me think of Eric Gray. I saw a video of him getting his lid popped off today. Let's talk about the running back room with Tyrone Tracy and obviously Motor Devin Singletary wearing 26. He's going to be expected to produce and replace Saquon Barkley. I don't know if he can exactly do that, but I think Giants fans will come to love this guy. He had some moments with the Texans. He had some moments with the Bills, and I think he's an underrated piece of this offense. If he can get going, that's also going to open up some time and some lanes for Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think with Singletary, you're seeing, you know, sort of Joe Shane's view on positional value, and I think it's a pretty widely held view, especially in this day and age of analytics. Like, you can kind of get a league average running back, plug him in, pay him $5 million rather than paying like the dynamic guy like Saquon, you know, whatever, it's $12.5 million. So that'll be put to the test here. I mean, he does have a better offensive line than the Giants have had in recent years, so that should help him. I mean, we talked about the weapons outside. That's kind of symbiotic. If he's running well, it'll help them, and if they're making plays, it'll help him. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be like this monster 1,500-yard season type guy, but I think he's going to be what he's always been, which is like, you know, 4.5 yards a carry, you know, 800 yards, just solid, you know, picks up 4 yards on first down, kind of keeps in front of the chains, that type of thing. And then, yeah, behind him, though, it's wide open. It's a lot of young guys with not a lot of experience. Obviously, Tyrone Tracy's a rookie. They got all these nicknames. They got Motor. They got Turbo, who's Miller from – he went to Columbia, then he went to South Carolina. I mean, he's an undrafted rookie. Eric Gray is a second-year guy. So all those guys, you know, basically have almost no NFL carries aside from the handful Gray got last year. So it's interesting they're going with such a youth movement behind Singletary. But, yeah, I think they're going to want Tracy to really seize that role and be that number two back who can also play on passing downs, obviously former wide receiver. So it makes sense that he can fit into that role.
Yeah, I think Singletary, and if it's a – backfield with him and Tyrone Tracy or Eric Gray, whoever it is, they just have to be enough of a threat where teams respect the run and they can't just say, all right, we're going to let Daniel Jones try and beat us and drop guys into coverage. Speaking of dropping guys into coverage, I think the weakness on this Giants team, and this is the last question for you, is the secondary. There's a lot of young guys in the secondary, young DBs, and in this NFL, if you have young DBs that don't know where to be, what they're doing, like, it can be a long day fast. How do you see the cornerback spot across the field from Banks shaking out as well as safety spot? I know Tyler Newbin missed some time. What are you looking at with this secondary, especially since they lost Xavier McKinney the year before that? They lost Julian Love. Like, some guys really got to step up and emerge for the Giants in the back end of that defense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the biggest question mark, I'll say, to be generous, potentially Achilles heel on this roster because, again, it's a lot of youth. So listen, if all these guys pan out, if Tyler Newbin comes in as a rookie and is really good, if Drew Phillips, who we talked about off the top, you know, plays really well as a rookie, like, okay, amazing. They'll have, you know, a great cost-controlled secondary to join with Deontay Banks. The spot opposite Banks, you know, all throughout camp has been Cordell Flott, right? Third-round pick from 2022. I mean, he hasn't looked good. There's no way to sugarcoat it. He gets beat deep a lot. Again, I was watching the offense today. I heard he got beat once or twice deep by Jameson Williams on the other field. So, that's a concern to me. Like, and the funny part is we kind of say, like, the guy opposite Banks, I mean, Banks showed glimpses last year, first-round pick, definitely looked like he belonged. Like, he wasn't, like, Sauce Gardner's rookie year, though. So, like, you can't even just count on him being like, all right, he's going to lock down one side of the field. So, no, I think there's major questions there. You know, Jason Pinnock has become kind of the guy at safety where he was the supporting cast with Love and McKinney the last couple of years. But he needs to step up. You know, he's only in the third or fourth season, I believe. And then, yeah, the other safety spot is up between, I think Newbin is kind of kind of going to make a push with Dane Belton, another 2022 draft pick is in that spot. So, I mean, all of these guys are so young, mm-hmm. and most, besides like Banks and Pinnock, haven't played a ton. So, you know, we'll see if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because we don't know what you're going to get. But listen, this is kind of what happens in the rebuild. The Giants could go out and sign a veteran safety. They could go out and sign a veteran corner. They could have tried to re-sign Adoree Jackson, who's still on the street. They've elected to go with this youth movement. So I think they're going to kind of sink or swim with these guys. And again, like early in camp, I think it looks a little more like sink. But, you know, that's what camp is for. That's what these joint practices. That's what these preseason games. And, you know, maybe in 3 weeks, if they're like, okay, these guys aren't ready for primetime, then you go make that signing. But I think for now, the idea and the plan is to just ride with these guys and hope they develop. But I think they'll absolutely will be growing pains at such a young secondary.
There it is. 100 years. Celebrating 100 years with the G-Men. Dan, you're the man. I appreciate you, bro.
Yeah, anytime.
That's Dan Duggan, who covers your Giants on The Athletic. I have been following his tweets since I've been on The Fan. I have had him on The Fan at least 4 or 5 times. You guys just heard him talk all about the team and what's going on at practice. Make sure you follow him. You follow him at DDuggan21, not for Tiki Barber, but for Marcus Camby. This is Keith McPherson on The Fan. No more guests, right? It's going to start opening up now. The phone lines are wide open now. 888-808-1019. I know you Jets fans heard that Sauce Gardner line. Hey, you know, Banks was no Sauce Gardner. We're definitely going to talk about some folks saying that Malik Nabers is already better than Garrett Wilson. Rumpelstiltskin. Keith McPherson on The Fan. We'll be right back.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Yep. KM to AM, the kids say it hits different. Let's get right back into it, folks. 888-808-1019. Shout out to my guests for joining me. I appreciate Pat and Dan. I'm, you know, able to just text them like, yo, bros, pull up. We got to talk about the Mets and the Yanks and the Giants. But next, we're going to talk about the Jets. So if you haven't been listening to this show tonight, I started at 7 p.m. talking about, we got to chill. Nobody knows what's going to happen in October. We're making much about practice, not the game, practice. Not the game I love. We're talking about practice. And in the NFL specifically, right, like I saw a stat about Jalen Hurts and how great he's been, and he hasn't thrown one interception in practice. So, like, I also saw Jalen Hurts in the advertisement for flag football joining the Olympics. I don't know if you guys saw that. In the L.A. Coliseum in 2028, L.A. will be hosting the Olympics. And I don't know, there's a commercial, and it's Jalen Hurts throwing the ball to, like, it's just stupid to me. One, I don't think he can throw the football up there. I don't know if anybody could. Two, he, like, dips the football in, like, fire. I guess there was, like, gasoline on it. That's a hazard. He's wearing gloves, three, to throw the football like Tom Brady used to do, like Kenny Pickett does, his backup quarterback. And then there's just no way with the contract that Jalen Hurts has, he'll be participating in 2028 Olympics for, it just, I don't know, they could have picked somebody else. Anyway, back to what I was talking about. I don't need to see all of these updates from practice. Guys' stats in practice, it doesn't matter. We used to never be able to see practice. But I did like to see what I saw about the fighting and the Giants sticking up for themselves and guys kind of trying to emerge as alphas, right? Guys trying to emerge as the stars of the team. You lost a huge star. You lost a huge playmaker in Saquon Barkley, but that doesn't mean there are none left. I think you got one for sure in Brian Burns. You know what you have in Dexter Lawrence. I think on offense, you know what you have in Andrew Thomas, and Malik Nabers is on his way to being a guy that turns heads. But, you know, before the break, I was talking about some proclamations that were made. Again, we got to chill. Speaking about Malik Nabers and Garrett Wilson, right? So I want to go back and find the quote. But we're already proclaiming that Neighbors is going to be the greatest Giants wide receiver of all time. Okay, July 18th. The quote is, a guy who I think will go down as the Giants' best wide receiver of all time. Tommy Lugauer. Lugie! Big Giants fan, positive Tommy. How? How do you think, like, because of where he was drafted? I mean, we've seen that not go well. Because of practice clips, he's going to be better than Odell Beckham Jr. He's going to be better than some of your guys that you won Super Bowls with. I know a guy like Amani Toomer who's over there talking about Caleb Williams is probably like, he's not going to be better than me. Ike Hilliard, Hakeem Nicks, Mario Manningham, those guys. Victor Cruz. And then from the, you know, the other side, Tommy's better half, Sean Morash, came out and said, Garrett Wilson is great, Malik Neighbors is better, and the world knows it. No, we don't. We haven't seen Malik Neighbors play in the NFL. And now I have to defend Garrett Wilson. Because really, you're only as good as a wide receiver. You're only as good as the quarterback throwing you the ball. The guy that distributes the pill. No wide receiver can be successful without a quarterback. Devontae Adams out there in Vegas. You need a guy that can get you the ball. And Garrett Wilson was able to win Rookie of the Year and have success and greatness with guys like Zach Wilson, who there are so many metrics out there that say Zach Wilson is the worst NFL quarterback we've seen over the years. Garrett Wilson was able to make it work, was able to get open, catch passes, have yards after catch. He was able to do that with Trevor Siemian and Timmy Boyle. I think that guy's pretty good if he can make it work with them. So we're already saying that Malik Neighbors is going to be better than all the Giants all time. Well, he's only going to be as good as Daniel Jones is getting him the ball. They can target him 10 times a game. He can have 10 targets and 2 catches. 888-808-1019. And for Garrett Wilson to be catching a stray, no. Garrett Wilson is playing with Aaron Rodgers this year. Knock on everything wood in here. It's mostly metal. I think there's some wood. These desks are wood. I think these wood, these, yeah, there's. Knock on wood, because I want to see those two go to work. I want to see what that offense looks like with a healthy Aaron Rodgers and a Garrett Wilson with something to prove. And now we're going to talk Jets because we haven't tonight. This Hassan Reddick thing is not just like, I know Rob Solid had a quote talking about guys not showing up like Aaron Donald and Chris Jones. Come on. Those are guys that were drafted by the team that won Super Bowls with the team. I know that's a quick pivot that you might have prepared, Coach. Not the same. This is a guy that went to a Super Bowl with the Eagles and is over here. He's looking to get paid because he sees guys like right across the stadium, Brian Burns, like, damn, look at what they gave up for him, what they traded for him, what they're paying him. I'm him. I think I'm him. He's not him. I'm him. So a guy like Hassan Reddick is trying to get paid, and I think he's getting fined this amount, expecting to get a contract. That's usually how it works, right? These guys are like, whatever. This money's not going to matter when I get my big deal. But this is the Jets, and I hate to say it, with the Jets, there's always something. No matter what, I have Rami on the other side. Rami being a lifelong Jets fan and also doing a Jets podcast. You know what I'm talking about.
100% agree, and I hate that I'm about to do this, but just to defend Salah for a second, that quote was when he was specifically asked about him ramping up and being ready for the season. So he pointed to other guys who were, who also sat out till week one, who at that position, and then were able to get on pace and on
and be ready to play and not miss a beat.
When
sure.
talking about, you know, him holding out, he said, yes, I thought he said all the right things because I am the first one to jump on Salah, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I have the podcast with Bilal Powell, and we jump all over Salah when he puts his foot in his mouth consistently. I actually thought the way he handled this today was as good as he sounded in the media since getting here.
Sure. I mean, he's got some making up to do from some things in the past. But
oh, yeah.
Hassan Reddick has potentially been fined close to $1 million so far by the Jets. This is coming from Dove Kleiman, so take it as you may. We should
know. Grain of salt spot.
We should know by now that this character that owns this account is like a fake person and whatever. But there was a $100K fine from skipping the 2-day mandatory mini camp, $50,000 per day in Jets camp for every day missed. So that's $550K so far, and an additional $300K optional fine for being this deep into camp without showing up. Okay, he sourced that from Connor Hughes. Shout out to Connor. Connor went to Monmouth University, my school. I actually reached out to Connor a couple days ago. I will be having him on as we get deeper into camp. But like I said, with the Jets, there's always something. There's always something. So this is what's hanging over camp right now. But all in all, I think that they have guys that, like, I was watching Good Morning Football. They interviewed Quincy Williams. I think he's going to have another good year. Quinnen Williams is going to have another good year. It's all about staying healthy. But, like, when I talk about staying healthy and I look at the changes they made to this offensive line, I was telling you guys about Tyron Smith. He's not going to practice. He's out right now with tightness. But I think that's just them saying he's a veteran and we don't want to mess up, you know, anything with him in practice. But you need to practice. We don't need all the clips and highlights and stats from practice, but you do need to get those reps. You do need to have cohesion with an offensive line whose job is to keep Aaron Rodgers upright, because everyone that roots for the Jets and everyone that's in that Florham Park building is depending on it. 888-808-1019. I do want to talk about Agent Zero. Is that his nickname? I don't know. But Braylon Allen was a kid that I wanted the Dallas Cowboys to draft. But they're so stupid that they traded a 4th-round pick for Trey Lance to rot on the bench for 2 years when they could have had a kid like this. And when the depth chart came out and I saw that he's the backup to Breece Hall, I said, oh, I like that. And there's more from that we're going to go over, but we got a break. 3 hours down, 2 hours to go. KM to AM returns right after this.